Blog Talk Radio.
I've never been asked that before. In a few words, I would say love, compassion, empathy, adventurous, nostalgic, old-fashioned.
Welcome, welcome to the Rainbow Coalition of Rock Medicine Women. My name is Beata, and you are listening to the beautiful flute music of Brother Wes Ricks. And at the end of that beautiful song, Wes Ricks introduced himself as someone who has love, compassion, and on the perimeters of society. A beautiful brother who was introduced to our show last week live. That one was Memorex, but I just love that music now. And so I thank Mom AZ for introducing Wes Ricks into our lives. Now we have him in our heart, mind, and soul. So welcome to Rainbow Coalition. We have an exciting show planned as usual. And Mama AZ, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome, Mama AZ.
Thank you so much. I'm just having a moment.
Yes.
I have a beautiful, beautiful sister. I was reflecting on that song and how this sister, Benishwa, came into my life and how it began to unfold when she came to a celebration and brought a friend, Linda Williams. And for you to play my brother's beautiful piece and the voice that Sister Benishwa has in this beautiful, beautiful song, whenever her spirit allows her to voice it, it just, you know, I'm having moments with healing and asking the Creator, okay, where do I go from here? What's
mm-hmm.
this all about? I need
mm-hmm.
help.
Mm-hmm.
So, sister, I give thanks to the Most High for you even opening up this gate, this platform for, you know, my extended family, like Brother Kwame and Dr. Stanley and Sister Davida and the sister who's Benishwa out of Greensboro, who is a powerful, powerful sister, who has challenges too with the sister is dogmatic when it comes to a passion that she has that she can talk to you about, talk to all of us about. And I give thanks that I've made some decisions, and I'll share with you later, Sister Viata. However, thank you. Thank us. And I asked Sister Benishwa, I think her number is 621-336-621, but give thanks. You doing good today?
I'm doing great today. And, yes, Sister Benishwa is in the house. I'm going to bring her on. Area code 336-621. Is that you, Sister Benishwa?
Yes, it's Bonishwa.
Bonishwa, can you sound so beautiful. How do you spell that?
It is.
B as in brother, O-N-I-S as in son, W-A. Bonishwa.
Oh, okay. That wasn't
thank you,
after all. Thank you very much.
So, thank you,
I didn't think of.
Hello?
It's nice
yes,
to have you
so,
here.
Okay.
It's wonderful. And I give thanks, sister. So I'm just going to let you, I mean, you know, Sister Viata is the host. And go for it, and I'm going to listen. Benishwa has been in my life quite a bit. She's more special to me than she even knows, and an encouragement to me in my journey that I have done and still are doing between here and Virginia. At Mothers for the Earth, at Arts, 5 and 7. So go ahead, Sister Benishwa.
Okay. Well, I just want to give my greetings first and foremost to Sister Viata.
Yes, nice to have you. Thank you.
So I definitely want to greet you, meeting you via phone, and I feel your energy already. So glad to be in this space. And Arizona, I love you.
I love Arizona,
I think you know that.
I do.
And so, yes, greetings, peace, and love, and Hotep, sisters.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
Peace and love. Okay.
Yes. So Arizona asked me to talk about the things that I'm doing here in Greensboro.
So shall I
just share? Are there any questions? How shall we proceed?
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where were you born and what your journey has been thus far? That's always a good place to start.
Okay. I actually was born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Left here as a child, and I was raised in Brooklyn, New York. So I'm a New Yorker, an African, but raised in New York. And
wow.
I've had a very interesting journey. Let's suffice it to say that I have struggled with lots of childhood trauma, lots of violence, addiction. I was also raised during the era of the fight for civil rights, so I remember being a part of the riots that were national, where black folk were burning down communities just in rage.
I'm sorry.
No, you're okay.
Go ahead.
That's just
okay.
That was an echo, I think.
Okay. Yeah, so I was raised with a lot going on. And I survived a lot. I won't go into specifics because it's a little too much for the time that we have. But suffice it to say that I'm a sister who faced death several times.
Mm-hmm.
And miraculously, I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally almost died about 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of those times, I tried to do myself because life was too hard.
Mm.
And you know, we don't talk about some things that we really need to talk about. And one
right.
of those things is the pain that we go through and what pain will drive people to do. And I'm still here, as I said. So because I'm still here, I asked Spirit why. And my answer was that I, like many, many of us, have work to do. And it doesn't matter what I do. Well, what happens to me, I still have work to do. And until that work is done, I'm going to be here.
Mm.
So I am now learning to accept my reality and other realities, make it as beautiful. I can create my own reality, and I am doing that, and make it beautiful and love the experience.
Mm.
And the past molded and shaped me, and the wounds that I have from the past, it is my job, very important job, to heal from those wounds. And so my focus is healing from woundedness from the past and helping to heal our communities, because you can't, not you can't, but it's not a part of the spiritual or healthy way of life to heal and not pass that on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's who I am. That's what I'm about. Any other questions?
Yes. Did I hear you say the Hopi way?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard you say the healing. It, you know, what it is about is the Hopi way. I was just checking to see if my ears heard it correctly. Okay.
Yeah.
I found that interesting that I heard that. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the pain issue, because I praise y'all for your testimony and your courage and your consciousness about your assignment. That's so powerful that
yes.
you come, that you hear from Spirit that you're not done. You have an assignment. You have work to do. And that's so encouraging for all of us. And I've been thinking a lot about how we deal with pain, both emotionally and physically. And 'cause I heard recently on an NPR radio show how the Mormon community in Utah has the highest rate of addiction to painkillers.
And they
were recently reporting on a woman who committed suicide by overdosing on prescription pain medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, that's so. And then I was listening to a show this morning, Naima Latif's Female Solution, and I touched on that. I mentioned that, and she got right to the issue of emotional pain. That then those Mormons, a lot of them are in that religious ritual thinking, and they're in pain because that's not their true self. A lot of them are following a religion. And I think suffering as a result, first emotionally, and then they may have other problems, back issues or whatever, physical issues. But when the host of Female Solution mentioned the emotional connection to our
mm-hmm.
pain,
mm-hmm.
boy,
mm-hmm.
did that wake a light bulb come on for me, how when we are in physical pain, a lot of times it's anger that we have not processed from you, like, for instance, you have lots of childhood traumas. How have you been processing that?
I actually went to therapy.
Okay.
I went to therapy, and I want to say a couple of things. Religion can be a good thing for good people and a bad thing for bad people. And organized religion, typically people are taught what to believe and how to believe. They're taught to have faith, but they're not taught to open their minds
mm-hmm.
and ask questions. As a matter of fact,
mm-hmm.
That's a bad thing, to ask questions, no matter what the religion is, whether it's Christianity,
mm-hmm.
Islam, or whatever. So basically, we all heard, you know, they're box religions. And so I had to step out of the box of religion because I was a, quote, Christian for some years. But I wasn't growing and I wasn't healing. But I was told that I would grow and heal. So that didn't make sense to me, and I started my own journey. And once I took a step on that journey, Spirit began to lead me. So that's one of the
mm-hmm.
first lessons I learned, and Spirit spoke to me very clearly and loudly and told me I had to take a step.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say that I'm fortunate in that, in spite of all the pain and emotional trauma that I've been through, the other side of that is it opened me up to hearing from Spirit. So
mm-hmm.
when I say hearing, I literally mean I hear the voice, like somebody's in the room with me.
Yes.
And I'm starting to hear an echo now. Let's see how we can work with this. So anyway, I struggled with some addiction, drugs, alcohol, for about 16 years. And I'd gotten to the point where I was almost dead. I'd lost a baby, just a terrible, terrible bottom, as we talk about in the field of addiction. And I was trying to take myself out. I had overdosed on alcohol and crack, and I was 7.5 months pregnant, and that overdose killed my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked around with a dead baby in my belly for about 7 days because
mm-hmm.
I was in such denial about what I'd done.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, my mother was a nurse, and I went and told her, you know, that something was wrong. The baby had stopped moving for 7 days, and I was rushed to the hospital, had induced labor, and had to look at this baby that I killed, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So after that happened, I proceeded to try to kill myself. I could not handle that emotionally, on top of all
mm-hmm.
the other trauma, past trauma that I'd gone through. Miraculously, I got into recovery, and that's when I started my process of healing. I started to understand that addiction is a disease, not something that you can deal with willpower, but you're literally addicted to a chemical or multiple chemicals, depending on what you're doing. And as I learned about that disease, I started to understand that most of us abuse drugs, and that includes food, sex, and many other things that we could become addicted to because of emotional pain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we walk around for years carrying pain and trauma, and we survive. But but we don't heal.
Mm-hmm.
So we call ourselves survivors, but a lot of times we don't do the healing work. And so while I was in 12-step recovery, someone suggested that I look into to counseling because I was still jacked up, to be honest. I was jacked up emotionally. I was repressed. I was angry. I was bitter. You couldn't come. If you came close to me, you could feel the anger energy. And so I got into therapy and started dealing with the childhood issues and other issues, and I began to heal because I was serious. I didn't just go and sit. I wanted to know what was at the root of the pain that I was carrying and the anger. I was a very violent person when I was younger. Why would a young person beat up on other people for fun? And so I started to get the answers. And I also need to say this because it's critical. You have to want to heal, and you have to be willing to look at things that are very difficult to look at because it'll bring back the original pain. But you can't heal it if you don't feel it. So you got to be willing to heal, I'm sorry, to feel the original pain and begin to work your way through it. And that's what I did. And I also was told by my therapist that I was almost an anomaly for a black woman, that black women typically do not stay and persevere in therapy. And so, but I did that because I wanted to be, I didn't want to be miserable. I was smart and I had certain gifts and I sing and this and that, but I was miserable. And I began to organize and do all this community work, but I still was miserable. And so I dealt with those childhood issues. And I can tell you that I am transformed. Not completely, because it's a lifelong process.
Yeah.
But just major, I've had major transformation. So yes, emotional healing for me is critical for us. Because again, you know, I've met over my years of dealing with, you know, with people in 12-step churches, organizing, I've met so many successful women, especially black women, because my focus is on the African community. And on the outside, we look great. You know, a lot of us, who those are into getting their hair and their nails done and, you know, or wearing the African garb, whatever the external may be, we look great. We're making money. But on the inside, we're traumatized. So we've learned how to thrive and survive, but not to heal. So one of the things that I've done in the past, and I actually was asked to start it up again, was to have a sister circle. And I invited women to my home to talk about their trauma, things that they've carried for 20 years. And that's where I learned something that I had a hard time believing, and that's that I'd say at least, I haven't looked at the research statistics myself, but at least 75% of, I'll say black women again because that's what my focus is, have been raped or molested. And many hold on to it, those memories. They don't talk about it. It's a secret. Hold on to it for years. And so in my home, when I started these circles, I had women come and talk about being raped and molested and scream and cry and fall on the floor. So just the heaviness and the pain came out in just a gush because it's the first time in 20 years that they ever mentioned it. And it was powerful, but it really tripped me out because I did not know that so many of us are sexually abused as children.
Yeah, it seems to be coming out more and more, these men abusing children. I mean, when you think about Oprah, for instance, Oprah told her story, and then she had women coming out of the closet telling their story
for years.
Women were admitting, and even men too, being molested.
Yes.
So definitely a problem in this country that we're seeing. Thank goodness people are healing. But another part of the pain that I'm seeing is this rejection that women, and maybe especially black women, I don't know, white women, but when I talk as a life coach, I talk to people a lot, and there seems to be this feeling that they were rejected from a young age, and that continual rejection as they become an adult and as they journey, they still are feeling the pain of the rejection in some form. Did you struggle with that at all, the actual rejection in your life that you experienced?
Yes, I did. And unfortunately, that is very common, rejection, being ignored, and jealousy. That's not my personal experience, but I've heard a lot of that, young girls having their mothers being jealous of them and mistreating them, emotionally abusing them. A lot of that comes from integration.
Mm-hmm.
When we integrated, when we fought to integrate, which was a horrible idea, we didn't know any better. We didn't know what the outcome would be. But we fought to integrate into a society that did not want us. So just think, if you are in a relationship with someone and they don't want you, and they say, go away, we don't want you, but you're fighting, saying, no, I want to sit and eat with you. I want to live in the same neighborhood with you. Of course you're going to get abused. And so the generation that fought so hard to be accepted by the oppressive society here that we're in wound up being horribly abused. The lynchings, you know, the beatings and abuse of children, you know, integrating schools. And so these people had children, and the trauma that they experienced from integration and the abuse resulting from, and of course there was abuse, you know, ever since we got here, it's passed down from generation to generation. So a lot of women had children, but they were so traumatized themselves, they were not even capable of showing them love.
And, you know, see, I had a different experience. I grew up in Chicago, and my dad, who was a Jim Crow survivor, he grew up, for 9 years he lived in Jim Crow, Louisiana. And so when he migrated to the North, His experience was continued ghetto life and living with other black folks. But once he got to be an adult and once he started raising a family, his focus, and especially after attending a interracial college, he was played football on a University of Nevada team where he was only one of two blacks on the whole team, but his experience with his white players was like family. They were like family to him. These white men were not racist. They were mostly from the North, Canada, and other places. They weren't from the South like some ignorant white men. But these men became his good friends. So when he raised his children, he wanted them in an integrated neighborhood. And we grew up in an integrated neighborhood in Chicago, Hyde Park. It's the same neighborhood Obama lived in. And I had the best childhood. I can't say that I experienced any negative except from black folks. Black folks, for me, were the thorn in the side a lot of the time, because being a fair-skinned black woman or child even, I grew up with a lot of negative attitudes from other black folks. So I think every African-American in this country has a different experience to talk about. And then my children, as a result, my children were always in integrated communities and schools. And this, to this day, I'm so proud of them. They don't judge anybody by color. They have white friends. They have Chinese friends. They have friends from every race you could imagine. And they are the most well-rounded young men. They, and in fact, my daughter-in-law is from Colombia, and my youngest son dates women of all races and colors, and they are the most beautiful people that I've met. His friends are true friends. So I'm saying that to say that we all have a different experience as African-Americans in this country that we need to talk about and share and help one another heal from the anger, from the rejection, from whatever experience we had. We need to help one another heal and realize that, like you said in the beginning, you have a mission. You have work to do. And most of your work is needed in the female black community, whereas the work that I do, it covers every race there is. I have, you know, friends of all races, and my clients have been different races, so I just think we need to tell our stories and help one another to heal and get rid of the pain that we're struggling with, which to me is mostly emotional, rejection, expectations. I mean, how many of us, like you shared, expected certain things from our parents, from our siblings, from our spouses, and we were disappointed?
Mm-hmm.
How many of us are carrying around that disappointment? And then every day or so, we're reminded of the rejection and the disappointment, and then the pain comes up, and then we have this cycle of people in pain, and they're having a hard time staying at a level of peace in their life and maintaining that because of the cycle of rejection that comes to mind and the experience of expectations not lived up to. But I think today we're learning and understanding that everybody's not going to meet our expectations, so we got to get over it and realize that, and then try and help one another to do what we are assigned to do in a divine way. And that's
mm-hmm.
how I see my journey now, is that I just have an assignment, and I've got to fulfill that assignment with as much love, compassion, and forgiveness and understanding that I can muster up every day. And most of my wounds are healed now, because I had to have we have to go through self-therapy sometimes. There's not enough people to help us. So there are plenty of books out there. There's so many people in the holistic healing field these days. Oh, my goodness, tapping, blog talk shows. So I think the help is really there. We just have to be open-minded.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to say a couple of things, because the issue of integration
mm-hmm.
that I was talking about and that you're referring to, of course we all have different experiences, different family issues, different
mm-hmm.
issues with colorism, it stems from internalized oppression. Every black person that's been under a system of oppression has internalized something.
Mm-hmm.
You're light skinned, we're gonna pick on you because you think you're white. You're too black and you're ugly. So we've internalized a lot of insane warped messages.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides.
Yeah.
And I would never negate anybody's experience because, again, we have, I mean, this is a very complex situation. We live in a complex world.
Yes, it is.
And so for the masses, I typically speak for the masses as an organizer, and I've seen the masses suffer from integration. I've heard many stories of people being abused. If you look at the Little Rock Nine,
mm-hmm.
those nine students that integrated that the school there in Little Rock, in their adulthood, late adulthood, they got into therapy because they realized that they were traumatized by, the jeering and the physical abuse, from integrating again into a society or an environment where they weren't wanted. That's a very real issue that we
mm-hmm,
often don't
mm-hmm.
talk about. We don't
mm-hmm.
talk about the lynchings. The average black child or teenager does not know the extent of the over 17,000 that we think that have been estimated, of black men that have been burned alive and hung from trees. So we're going to tell the history, or as my mom used to say, tell the story. We got to tell the whole thing, you know, and understand those things that our parents and grandparents were, what they were traumatized by. Imagine driving down the street and seeing someone hanging from a tree. I mean, that was normal in the early 1900s. So imagine what that does to the psyche, and you can't do anything about it. But
can
cut
I
them
say
down.
Something? Can I say something?
Yeah. So I just wanted to wind up this piece, sis. And so the trauma, you know, again, is often generational, because if the parent doesn't heal, then they don't have healthy parenting skills to pass on to the younger ones. So, yeah, I'm finished.
Amazing.
You know, when I moved from San Diego to St. Augustine, Florida, Gullah Geechee Nation, you know, most of my the people that I associated with in San Diego were from overseas or Caucasian. And even when I grew up in Arizona, in Phoenix, you know, I didn't know what a plantation was. This is a true story, and I tell it on a documentary. I was driven by the ancestors, and it hurts me that I had to move from Gullah Geechee Nation, still married to a guy that I didn't know, that even my parents didn't tell me anything. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, my friends like Brenda, we have a mutual friend, many thought I was just BSing, that I didn't know. It took my husband to bring certain things to my attention about racial issues, because I had a hard time growing up in my family. There was so much dysfunction, name calling, and even with my own people. However, I didn't recognize when we had to go to the back of the bus. I was a little girl, and my granddad would take me to downtown to get some pizza or a hamburger. And I was about four or something like that. And I noticed that we couldn't get on the front. We had to go to the second door. And it's just a whole lot of things. When I really began to see things is when I moved to Florida and experienced how melanated people would treat me, including my own in-law, you see. And I'm like, what is this? And then when I moved to North Carolina, basically the majority of my acquaintances were Caucasian, because I couldn't find someone who resonated on my speed. And my husband would say to me at the time, he said, you don't know who you are, do you? And then my friend Brenda would say to me, Arizona, you're not joking. You really don't know these things, do you? We thought you were faking. But I'm looking at everybody thinking, why would I BS about not knowing? Driven to the plantation in a little red rental car, didn't know from Phoenix, Arizona, what a plantation was. It's all on a documentary. And I'm like, whoa. When I met Benishwa, how did we meet, sister?
Oh, Lord, you asked me about, what, 12, 15 years ago?
No, it was longer than that.
Yeah.
It was maybe about 20.
Yeah, long time. Okay, yeah, at the time that we met, I think I was a Baha'i. And so to the point, you know, the issues of race and whatnot, I was spending the majority of my time with white people and other indigenous people, but the majority of my friends were white. And that's the time that I met you, when I was Baha'i, I think. And
yeah, you brought Brenda.
Yeah, right, because Brenda and I, exactly. So, you know, the issues that I think we need to be clear about as indigenous people and as people is that it's not so much about who you hang with and where you grew up, although those things shape and mold you. I'm talking, and those of us that are activists are talking about the systemic racism,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the issues that affect all of us on some level. All of us have a son or a nephew or a cousin that is being abused by stop and frisk. I spoke at a college recently, A&T, and someone asked how many, there was an auditorium full of students, and someone asked how many students had someone in their family that was incarcerated. And over half the auditorium raised their hands, and I almost fell out of my chair. Incarceration is the new slavery. It is horrible. Now they're targeting black girls and arresting kindergarten girls. There's a newspaper article, two articles.
Back up,
mm-hmm.
sister. They're arresting who?
They're arresting kindergarten girls.
That's what I heard you say.
Yes, there's an article in the Final Call and also the paper here in North Carolina, Phoenix newspaper, an article by Jawanza Kunjufu, and the studies are now finding that they are suspending and arresting young black girls for just one of her classmates sneezed, and the girl said, "God bless you," and she was suspended.
What?
Black girls are being suspended for wearing natural hair. All these minor things that just are shocking. Black girls, a kindergarten girl was arrested for something. She was literally handcuffed and put in a police car. Jawanza Kunjufu is a brother who's been fighting for liberation for many years. He's an educator. And when he wrote, so, you know, he's authentic. He's done his research. And I'm just shocked at the systemic and systematic things that are being done to attack black people and brown people, but primarily black. And I really want to stress that we need to really pay attention to what's happening, because we're in a pretty dangerous time now. And it's
One of the things we're doing on to be proactive in that sense is studying law. We have a group called the People's Law Study Group, Brother Houston in Texas, and we feel like in this group of family that the solution to all these arrests and harassment and is to know the law, because there are things that you can say or not say in a courtroom that will either put you in jail or set you free. And so part of the problem is ignorance, is that we don't have the knowledge to stand up to wrongful attacks or wrongful behavior, unjust behavior. And so one of the things we need to do as the solution is to educate ourselves about the law, the civil law, and what will keep people out of jail. Because a lot of times it's just a matter of knowing what type of accusation is being brought against you and realizing that that's not part of the law. So one of the solutions is to educate our youth on what the law is all about. So we're doing that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, every Monday night there is a People's Law Study Group that comes on Blog Talk Radio. Or no, actually it's a conference call.
Mm-hmm.
So with Professor Houston. So that's one of the solutions. I think that we have to stop seeing ourselves as victims so much, and just realize that in my journey is that we reap what we sow. The karmic energy is always moving, and if we're going to change what we're reaping, then we have to change our choices and our belief system.
That's absolutely true. And we also have to, as you talked about, the law classes, really focus on the solutions, because that is critical. The first step in solving any problem is awareness.
Yeah.
And we have to be aware of what's actually going on. Like I mentioned, these young girls being targeted and Arizona's response, most people don't know that yet. So people don't know. I better start learning about how extensive is this. Is this happening just in maybe some southern towns? Is it a national problem? We need to really look at what's actually happening, because we have a tendency to call ourselves victims without really understanding that we are victimized. You don't have to have a victim. We don't need a victim mentality, but we are being victimized. So how do we empower ourselves so that we don't, continue to get victimized? And the other piece of that is some of this you can't escape. Eric Gardner, he may or may not have known the law, but they killed him anyway. The little boy Tamir Rice, 12 years old, they just rolled up on him and killed him. And that happens all over the nation every day. There's a black man that is killed every 24 hours. Of course, it's more. White militia groups have grown 700% since Barack Obama was elected. So there's a lot of targeting going on, and we have to be aware of it, or else we won't be prepared. We won't know, what to do, what areas to study. Now, the other piece, when you talk about education, I'm a firm believer in independent schools. We need to start teaching our children their history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody saw Hidden Colors 3, but when I think it was Dr. Umar talked about the thousands of inventions that were made by slaves that were just stolen. Our children need to know that.
Right.
That
right.
We're brilliant. We invented lots of, probably the telephone. So independent schools are critical.
Now, Benishwa, in Greensboro, you've done extensive reaching out to the people in that area. What I want to ask you, the change or the growth of knowledge, awareness, meaning from the time that you started this mission to now, do you feel from your point of view in the area that you are targeting that it has been most effective and that it's growing? Teamy, are you still teamed with Reverend Nelson Johnson?
Yes, we're still connected. I haven't done anything with Beloved Community Center for a while because I was focusing. We started an organization called Harambe Summit, and Harambe meaning all pulled together in Swahili. And I called the leaders in Greensboro to come together and pull together regardless of religion, and the different the generational gaps that we have, requesting that we come together with our differences and work toward solutions. Because what the sister was saying was right. We can't live in a problem. We have to keep moving towards solution. And primary solution is unity, because we're very fragmented.
How successful was that?
Excuse me?
How successful was that?
Fantastic. Beyond what we expected. We had Muslims, Christians, Rastafarians, elders, 70-something years old, youth, 20, in the early 20s, came out. And we were expecting about 10 people maybe, and over 40 people came out. And it was just amazing. People want to be self-determined. Our focus is also on self-determination. We need to determine our own destinies, what we want to do about our own communities. and stop relying on anybody else to do anything for us. And so the turnout was amazing. There's a high excitement level because people do want to feel empowered. We just need strategies, and we need to come together. So that's in process. Also, I want to talk for a minute about how much more time do I have? Because there are two things I want to get in.
You have plenty, about half, almost half an hour.
Okay. So that's people are really empowered by that. And let me just say, there was a young man here, Arizona. I don't know if you ever met this young man, but his name is Rufus.
And, no, ma'am.
Yeah, he was walking down the street. He has four children. He's a single father raising four children. He was walking down the street, and the police started harassing him. And his brother caught it on camera. And so, you know, we watched the police, you know, knock him to the ground and handcuff him. And, you know, just the sheer, you know, attacking and brutality of this young man just because he was black just brought it home, you know. So he had a place to come. Between our organization and Beloved Community Center, he had a place to come and share his pain. You know, and he talked about being harassed several times. And so the community is rallying around him, and we're actually working to deal with the officers that attacked him. And that's, from what I'm hearing, that's very successful. I hadn't been involved in that one, that particular case. But, yes, there's success there. Mm-hmm.
Okay, when did this happen?
This happened, I think, last summer. I can send you, because I think the video is on YouTube, so I can send it to you.
Okay, to Sister Viata. Also, I'd like to make the audience aware, if they're not, you are calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. And that was one major reason that I decided to become a Baha'i, was because of the Baha'i's input there in Greensboro and the racial issues that I was never aware of until my husband brought it to my attention about the Nazi Klan shootout there in Greensboro. That Greensboro, North Carolina, flows with an energy. They always have something going on between the police. And could you tell us a little bit about the Nazi Klan shootout there in Greensboro and what that energy is about there, Venetia, unfolding energy? Go ahead.
Well, now I wasn't here when that happened, so I just know Reverend Nelson Johnson. But basically, there was a protest by something Communist Party, and it was a group of all, you know, multiracial young people that were doing a Death to the Klan rally, because of course the Klan was terrorizing, you know, areas in the South, and so people started, you know, decided to stand up against them, and they organized this rally. And the police made sure that they were absent. Usually, if you have a rally, you know the police have to have a presence there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the police made sure that they were absent. There was not one officer on the scene. And so these people came out to march and protest the Klan. And a car full of Klansmen rolled up on the protesters and without a word began to shoot them and kill them. And five protesters were killed. Four were white and one was black. And, of course, they put nigger lover, you know, on the white ones. And no one was ever brought to justice. Brought to justice. 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
1979. Mm-hmm. So, Beloved Community Center, which is an organization that works toward justice for all people, they've been really fighting to, you know, bring this issue to the people so that people will know that this is a part of Greensboro's history, because once again, you know, we sweep the lynchings and things like this under the table. Not we, they. and we need to know this part of history. So yeah, they've been fighting for justice for that one since 79, and here it is 2015. I think they might have gotten an apology, which is pointless because lives were lost. So the Beloved Community Center continues to do amazing work with farm workers and, you know, just amazing work. They've actually established a Council of Elders, and it's a national organization. Harry Belafonte, Danny Glover, Alice Walker, so many prominent people who are working for justice on this council. Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, this Reverend Nelson Johnson is one of the founders of that.
Wow.
Yes. And I actually had the opportunity to sing with a group that I started for the Council of Elders a couple of years ago when they met here, their first meeting, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh,
so people are doing some great things.
I'm pretty sure that you can send some of this potent information to Sister Viata, and you know what? I'm thinking that maybe there may be a time that maybe on your show on Sunday, Sister, Soul Purpose Healing, that maybe if you know Reverend Nelson Johnson isn't quite busy because he's he's always busy. And maybe Vinishwa, you can be a part of that gathering to connect Reverend Johnson with Sister, you know, to be on her show or even It's My House.
I'll ask. Mm-hmm. I will certainly bring it to his attention. And if Sister Viata, if you would send me something, your contact information. And maybe a written request. It's a short request. I will definitely get it to him.
Mama AZ, you have Sister Benicia's contact information? Unless you want to give it to me over the air.
My phone number, you have my phone number, 621-1669.
Oh, okay. We'll contact you.
Okay, we'll do that. I mean, you know, all we can do is ask because it's very important awareness and these kinds of things should be known about what melanated people are doing all over this planet. And Benishwa, I give thanks that you muster the stamina up. It's like me and my rock medicine. You know the things that I do, and I don't do what you do. However, you are really you have tenacity, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful.
Well, you know, I believe that we are all spirits here having a human experience. We're spiritual beings. I believe that. And we're all precious. I believe that. And we all need love.
Yes, we do.
So first and foremost, I believe and I've experienced the creative spirit to be pure love and light. That's my personal experience. I don't know about, you know, other people have other experiences. And I do know we don't have to have the same experiences to love each other. And we don't even have to understand each other, but respect each other's experiences.
Yeah.
And walk together in some kind of way. That is absolutely what I believe. And I believe in truth telling. We have to tell the ugly truths. We cannot be free without knowing these ugly truths. Bob Marley said, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. It's so powerful.
That's right. You are the only being that can free your mind.
That's
right. You know, I'm very grateful for the work that you've done And Sister Viata, when this sister sends some of the info, you'll know why I felt the need. She called me the other night, and I was in such discomfort, family issues, and wondering why. And when you have those issues of anger, you know, it changes the whole structure within your being, and you hurt. And I'm very grateful for meditation and these kinds of things that I have been involved with since I got to North Carolina. But matter of fact, even when I was living in St. Augustine, Florida, you know. So I'm very grateful that at this time in my life, I can continue to help myself and others by meditation.
I just wanted to say, Arizona, that there's this doctor from Ghana, and he said something very powerful, that true healing cannot occur without nurturing. So we need community, you know, talking about things and gaining knowledge, you know, all of that is wonderful and it's important. We need to focus a little more on nurturing each other. That is why I called you back.
Yes.
And said, you know, that's why Spirit had me call you back and talk about the song, because we need to nurture each other, you know, especially as we're dealing with emotional healing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No matter where what the source is, we need to do that.
We do. And thank you for, you know, just you saying that. We do, people. We do need to learn or relearn how to nurture one another, each other as a community. It's sad sometimes that we choose to be invisible to others, you know, because we just don't feel the need to nurture.
And that's, again, because, you know, our communities began to crumble with integration. And just like Sister Viata was saying, you know, because she's of a lighter hue, you know, those are a lot of the things that we as a community have to heal from so that we can nurture each other. You know, that's important. You know, what Viata, what you experience, you know, and what others. As I said, some of the darker sisters, I had one over here, not one, that sounds weird, but I had a darker chocolate sister over here, you know, who was rejected severely because of her dark skin. So, again, we need to put these things out on the table and begin to heal from them.
Yes. Well, so, sister, do we have time, enough time left if Sister Venishwa chooses to serenade us if there's a time? Or, I mean, I would love for you to hear this song. Mm. It's just like the beginning with Brother West and the ending, well, not ending, but the closing for now. I don't know. You tell us.
That would be awesome, please. That would be, we'd be honored.
Okay. Before I do the song, I also want to mention that we started a media company called Nkrumah Media, and it's media for consciousness. And we have a Facebook page, and it's Nkrumah.media. Please visit our Facebook page so that you can see what we're doing. We're looking for artists, spoken word, hip-hop, and we're working on a documentary. So, again, go to the page, Nkrumah, Facebook page, Nkrumah.media.
How do you spell it? Spell it.
N, as in, no, K-R-U. M as in mother, A-H, Krumah.media.
Okay, in Krumah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
For that information.
Okay. All right, I'll go into the song because I think our time is winding up, yes?
We've got about 15 minutes.
Okay. So I'll do the song. And Sister Viata, this is a song in Kiswahili, and it's called Sifa, and Sifa means praise.
Praise. Oh, nice.
Sifa zote zemnikwa into a you see. Sifa zote zemnikwa mumba. Sifa zote zemnikwa jua. Mwanwa jua. Sifa zote zemnikwa makatishwa kamaida. Sifa zote zemnikwa viungo viwetu. Sifa zote zemnikwa chama chertu. Sifa zote zemnikwa makatishwa kawaida. Moja na saba na saba na moja. Sifa zote zemnikwa makatishwa kawaida. Zile nguzo saba na zaina. Zile nguzo saba na zaina. Zile nguzo saba na zaina. Sifa zote zemnikwa into a you see.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Yes. Thank you.
You know, thank you. That just reminds me that when we have people who come into our environment, our midst, and who irritate us in any way, we need to praise, start praising. Because
yes.
I've learned that everybody is a teacher or a student. And so instead of letting our relatives upset us, our friends upset us, whether melanin or other, we should praise. I think part of our role as women of consciousness is to recognize the adversarial energy that comes to confront us and then praise. Mm. Like if we could break out in that song, oh my goodness, wouldn't that be awesome?
Mm.
That the people who are irritating us would step back and say, wait a minute. Wait a minute, what is this?
Yes.
Instead of seeing us get all bent out of shape and all upset and in discomfort, they might say, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. Or let me love you, let me hug you, please forgive me. So that song just stirred up in me the mind to praise whenever we meet the adversary. And you know who that adversary is. Even you, Mama Maisie, you just mentioned some relatives or someone irritated you. So when they come in, when you talk to them or see them again, it's like, sing this song, praise song.
I wish.
You know, that's very powerful.
You have got
That song has some powerful protective energy in it, I believe.
Yes.
I want to tell you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is something that our ancestors and the ancestors and spirit gave me to start singing, and I'm saying that because I learned this song when I was 16, and I am 58 now. Now, I told you about addiction, all the things that I've gone through. That song was way somewhere in the recesses of my mind.
Mm.
And Spirit brought it back to me some years ago. And I started singing it. And I literally had to I found a sister that spoke Swahili so she could translate the words for me because I had forgotten it was so long ago. And I had to relearn some of the words. So I literally put the song back together. The sister translated it. She wasn't quite sure in some areas, but it was perfect. Spirit just made it happen. And whenever I sing that song from children to elders, it touches people on a deep level. So that is from Spirit. You know, that's part of my assignment because that was not my intention to remember this wonderful song.
No.
You know, and your suggestion was very powerful.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was powerful. Well, your suggestion is break out of that song and break up that nasty energy. Break out and break it up.
Yeah,
and
this is
the next question or request. Sister Venishwa, can you personally make me a copy and send it to me? So when I have these moments with my family, I can play that song. And then the next request, I would love for you to get with Brenda and see about going to the LGI for the sacred gathering of the women and sing that song on those grounds. I'm only asking because the LGI is really a very powerful place, and if only those ones knew how powerful it was. So just reach out to Brenda and Miss Tangela and see if you can't go and sing that song by the stones that are there that came from all over the planet. The reservations, Wounded Knee, the Battle of the Bighorn, everywhere those stones are there that I gathered with the help of the ancestors. They're there at the LGI. So I'm just asking, my sister. Please.
I'll reach out.
Take us.
Aho. Thank you. Thank us. So if we don't have any comments or questions from our listening audience, then I bless you both. I bless you all who are listening. And we will go out once again with Brother Wes Ricks serenading us with Two Worlds from the DVD Two Worlds. Bless you, Sister Bonisoa and Sister Mama AZ, and we'll be back again next week.
Many
Shalom.
Blessings. Peace and love.
Peace and love. I hope.